Red Eye is 3 hours of alternative politics and culture, broadcast live from 9 until noon every Saturday morning on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM in Vancouver, Canada. Here's Lorraine Chisholm.
2 weeks ago, a large group of people in Vancouver got together to explore their thoughts and feelings post-September 11th through the medium of theater. But they didn't just sit and watch a play, they created a performance based on the experience of one of the group, and they used theater to create a community dialogue and better understand the world around them. This event, and a similar one the previous night in Surrey, was organized by Headlines Theater Company. Headlines has been using theater as a tool for social change for over 20 years, and we're joined this morning by Artistic and Managing Director David Diamond to find out more about the kind of work that Headlines does. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
I feel kind of funny saying that because, in fact, we've talked about a lot of the different work that Headlines has done, just a tremendous body of work that you've done over the last, well, since I've been in Vancouver, the last 18 years. I've seen tremendous things coming out of Headlines.
Well, thank you. Yep, just, you know, being around for a little while. Time at this point.
Well, that is good. Being around is a long time is good if you're working on the progressive side of things. I think I went to the event Reaching Across here at the in Vancouver. What motivated you to facilitate that particular event?
Well, you know, we're in a time, I think, of monologue right now. You know, we have just elected a provincial government that's going to be in monologue for the next 5 years. We're in monologue more and more and more from the corporate sector. There's many monologues going on. And the new monologue is the war on terrorism. It's a monologue. And, you know, Headlines Time now books about a year in advance. But it felt really important to do something, not to do nothing. And so I came into the office about 3 weeks prior to the event. And we got to do something, and there isn't a lot of time in the calendar. I think really what we could do is offer like a Rainbow of Desire event, something that doesn't mean creating a play, because we didn't have the time for that. And then, so phone calls went out, one to Kamal Sharma, who's on our board of directors, and he very quickly put us in touch with people inside the Muslim community in Surrey, like the folks at the Miracle newspaper, and they needed to say, yes, this is a good idea. And once that happened, which happened very quickly, this happened in like 60 minutes, all this whoom, phone calls got made. And so then we had an organizing core quite quickly, the Miracle newspaper, the Muslim Youth Center, and it took some time to agree on dates, and then organizing started. And then the Croatian Cultural Center very, very generously came on board because we wanted to do one in Vancouver as well.
Mm. I think it was an amazing thing. I think I was first leafleted at an anti-war event, and I was just like tremendously excited and relieved almost to see that Headlines was going to put on event that night, and I think the outcome was very interesting. And I want to look a little bit more in detail at what happened on the evening. I was at the Vancouver one, and as I said in my introduction, the performance was based on the experience of the group. So how does that story come forward?
Well, the exercise that we're using is called Rainbow of Desire, and it's I've been using it as performance for a number of years now. For instance, we did the first experiment was on safe sex. So that, you know, what is the complication between two people negotiating safe sex? It was really easy to get people to come to that. In this event, I'm asking for a story from three people in the group who go into a moment where the situation between them and another human being becomes very complicated, full of contradiction, in this case, around events since September 11. The story that came out of the group, you know, we had three stories, and the room chooses one story that resonates with the room. In this case, it was from a woman in who lives in an apartment building, and a few days after September 11, she's put a peace sign up on her door, and a delegation from the building comes to her door with a petition signed by everybody in the building saying that the peace sign is offensive, is an insult to the victims of New York, and are insisting that she take it down. And in the terms of the exercise, I think it's really important because it is about reaching across fear and desire to honor both sides of the story. Like, for instance, the story the previous night in the Muslim Youth Center came from a young guy. He and his parent are watching the news, and they get into a screaming argument about U.S. foreign policy. Not the first time they've had this argument, and they walk out of the room on each other. And so, you know, it's parent and child. It's very important in that moment to honor both sides of the story. The work has less value if you're creating the enemy, creating the cartoon enemy. And so then what we're doing is we're reaching into the... So somebody from the room comes to play, in this case, the neighbor. So very quickly, it's no longer the original... It's no longer the storyteller's story. This isn't the real neighbor. It's somebody playing the neighbor. We're not there to do a psychoanalysis of the storyteller. It isn't a therapy moment. It's a way for a group of people to come together and use the theater, a symbolic language, to create theater, so that we can explore moments in our own lives. So then you've got both the storyteller, the woman, and the neighbor on the stage. You see the moment. And then I'm asking both of them to physicalize the fears and desires inside them in this moment. Other audience members are coming on stage to be characters who are those fears and desires. So you're peopling the stage with all the voices that are raging inside that moment. Once you've got them on the stage, you can do all kinds of improvisational work in various couplings. You're not in those moments looking for the answer to the problem. You're trying to peel the layers of complexity away from the moment. And in that way, not only understand the symbolism of that moment, but because the audience, like in any cultural event, is reflecting their own lives off what's happening on the stage, understanding the complexity of those moments in your own life with your friends, your family, strangers in the street, the person you encounter in the elevator, trying to understand your reaction to quote unquote the other, mm-hmm. around. No, I guess not only around events around September 11, but in life.
Mm. The thing that I kind of found interesting in that evening in particular, and I think it's the first time I've been to other Headlines theater events, Forum Theater and so forth, but I mean, it was such an unpassive event. It was like people were almost leaping on stage to be... The audience was so involved. It was like the audience was together trying to create some kind of understanding of something. That was my perception. Mm-hmm. Is that something that is typical of the kind of experiences when people...
Yeah, you know, there's a couple ways to answer that question because I think there's various things going on. We've been doing this work for a long time now. And so, you know, when we started, people went, huh? You know?
But, I was there, I think.
But there's a growing consciousness now that theater doesn't have to be a consumer event. It doesn't have to be, you know, that you buy a ticket, then you sit in the dark and watch people you don't know tell you a story about people you don't know. It can be a different kind of moment where we're using the theater to tell our own stories about ourselves. So I think there's a larger body of people who have that understanding and have a willingness to engage in the moment. Partly that's going on. But also I think, coming back to this idea of the ever-deepening monologue, I think people have a really primal need to be in dialogue. And it's becoming harder and harder to do that. And so when the opportunity creates itself now, I think there's a stronger impulse, in fact, never mind that we've been doing the work for a lot of years. People are hungry to be in dialogue. And so when the possibility presents itself, they do it.
Mm. The racism that surfaced since September 11th has been one of the most disturbing aspects of the crisis. Yet, in the Vancouver event, I think two out of the three of the stories were offered by one people, and the one that was chosen didn't really deal with racism. And I was wondering how you create a space for people who have been shut out of Canadian society to get up on stage and talk about these issues.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, there are various ways to do that. At Headlines, if you've been aware of Headlines, what we put on stage this last 15 years, I think pretty much 100% of the time, and I'm really proud of being able to say that, the diversity of the Canadian population sees itself on stage in Headlines shows. I think that's one way you do that. And sometimes you've got to really work at doing that. You can't just, it doesn't just happen. And working at it sometimes really pisses the mainstream off because they see it as reverse racism. That's a very difficult conversation to get into with a mainstream cultural community. But, you know, when people have been, as you say, shut out of the dialogue for such a long, you know, time, they go, why would I want to be involved? And so there have to be other ways to reach out. Then it's about also about the stories you choose to tell. You know, the way one chooses to offer stories. You need to be able to make space for those folks to be able to offer their stories. And, you know, I think in that room that night, I think, you know, the diversity in the room was quite strong, was quite broad. And so the room chose the story that it related to the strongest. I don't think it was choosing a story from a Caucasian woman or not. It ended up being her story. And she offered a story that the United Nations in the room chose. And that was a perfectly appropriate moment for me. You know, I don't think that was a moment of exclusion at all, in fact, because the room really made that choice together. Does that answer your question?
Totally.
Yeah.
much of Headlines' work is in this participatory vein, or probably all of it is. What in your mind is the greatest benefit of blurring that boundary between performer and audience?
The greatest benefit? Well, you know, it just, okay. I have to step back in order to answer this question. You know how if you don't express yourself, you get sick? You know, if you keep it all bottled up inside yourself, eventually you get sick. Well, just like your body is made up of cells that make up the living organism of your body, a community is made up of people that make up the living organism of the community. The way communities used to express themselves was through song, dance, drama, painting, sculpting. It's only recently in the evolution of humankind, by that I mean the last few hundred years, that that activity, that cultural activity, has become something that we buy. And it stopped being something that we do. So now we buy movies, we buy plays, we buy dance, we, you know, etc. But when do we get together as community to use a symbolic language to tell our stories, not as individuals, but as community? We don't, ever. We don't do it. And so the greatest benefit is that it leads to healthy community, because communities, just like people, have a health need to tell their stories. So that, for me, that's the greatest benefit. It leads to healthy community.
I want you to talk about what you've been doing this week, because I understand you've been getting up at 5:30 every morning as we've been trying to arrange to have an interview with you. And
which
trying
is
to let
really
you,
early for me.
Trying to let
in
you
the
sleep.
Theater.
That's right. We sort of never have artists before the third hour. That's usually our policy. So tell me about the project you've been doing at Sutton Surrey.
It's a pilot. It's been in Richmond. Been a pilot project in a school, Charles E. London School in Richmond. And it went to performance yesterday, and it went extremely well. On bullying in the schools. And so we have been working with 18 young people who are students in the school for a week. And during the course of that week, they put together two very strong plays about bullying in the schools. One in particular was very challenging. A girl comes out to her best friend, another girl, about being a lesbian. And a course of events unfolds where the friend turns her back on her. They end up in a group of people who are all yelling, fight, 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 fight. And a very violent fight unfolds where the girl who's has come out gets beat up. So now there are 300 kids in the auditorium in bleachers, and you know they know that we're there to investigate issues that are going on inside the school, and we show them this play, they know that all the kids on the stage are in role now; they're all actors. And they know that we're there to have a dialogue about stuff that nobody wants to talk about, but that's really happening inside the school. And they took it on. They really took it on. And it was interesting to watch the staff, because a number of the staff were in tears throughout it. Because, you know, nobody wants to talk about this stuff. It's easier to talk about the harassment that happens in the hall, you know, like the stuff that you would normally think is going on in the school, but this stuff is really underneath in the school. And the suicide rates are high. And nobody wants to talk about it. And so this group of kids were extremely brave. So now the experiment that's unfolding is there's going to be two more performances. The next one in a school, we're going to take these plays into another school in Richmond, and I'm going to be there. And two of the group have self-selected to joke, to facilitate the interactive event. So I'm going to do that with them the next time. And then I'm going to be there, and they're going to do it alone the next time. And so the idea is that then Charles E. London and the drama teacher, this wonderful woman, Jean Kosar, will then have this, and they will tour inside Richmond. So it's peer-to-peer at that point. And if we can get it to work, then it's something I think that we can do in other districts. So you go in. It's not that they then have to create a new play. You know, and the kids don't have to know how to be a facilitator who's got 20 years experience. You know, they need to know how to facilitate that play. And it appears, you know, they're a little scared at the moment, but that they're going to be able to get their hearts and their heads around this and take it. And at that moment, I think it's very, very powerful because it's peer-to-peer. Mm. It's not a group of adults coming in talking to them about bullying issues.
Mm. It's just tremendously empowering stuff. If people are interested in learning the skills of facilitating interactive theater workshops to take back to their own communities, how could they do that?
We offer training sessions every August now. The level one, I think, starts on August 4th or something like that. Call the office, 604-871-0508. One of the wonderful things about the training sessions is people are coming from all over the world for them. The level one is 48 hours over 6 days. It's really intense. But people really are walking out of those with real skills they're taking into their programming, you know, so they're taking it into youth programming, into environmental work, into health work. You know, it's not about necessarily, although this has happened, that people have started theater companies. It isn't about that. It's about taking this language into other aspects of our lives. And last year, people came from Vancouver, from all across North America, from Singapore, Korea, Japan, Australia, and Pakistan. So it's also a way to meet like-minded people from like all over the world. An amazing group of people last year.
Hmm. Well, David, it's been an incredible pleasure talking to you this morning. Thank you very much for coming down and having the conversation with us here.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with David Diamond. He's the artistic and managing director of Headlines Theatre Company. Headlines' next big project is called Thirsty. It's about water. And for information on Headlines' projects past and future, you can check their website at www.headlinestheatre.com.
You've been listening to a program produced by Red Eye, an alternative media collective which broadcasts every Saturday morning from 9 until noon on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM, in Vancouver, Canada.